You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
If you're 21 years old and use nicotine or tobacco, I'm here to tell you about Black Buffalo and how it's redefining tradition for millions of adult consumers. So if you're over 21, consume nicotine or tobacco, and want to join the Black Buffalo herd, head over to blackbuffalo.com to learn more. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Black Buffalo products are intended for adults aged 21 and older who are consumers of nicotine or tobacco.
The NFL draft is now officially open.
This is draft season, brought to you by Moody's. Decode risk, unlock opportunity. Visit Moody's.com to learn more. John Schmelk, joined by Tony Pauline from Sports Kita. As we are every week here, Tony, we are 1 month until the NFL draft.
Getting close. All the news, the rumors are going to be flying. It's going to be fun. Pro day week, or I should say pro days are in its final week. Right after Easter, there's a couple, but it's going to get interesting. I mean, now is when the real focus, especially after the owners meeting, turns towards the NFL draft for the greater audience, I should say.
Have the lies starting, have they begun starting to get fed to you yet, Tony? Or is that process not yet started where you're trying to sort through the nonsense from the reality?
Well, I mean, that's constant. You know, people pushing their players, people pushing this or that. So that's constant. I would expect more, and I'm sure we'll touch on some of it during this show.
Absolutely. So we have pro day season. Those are going on right now. A little bit later on this week. This is airing on Wednesday. So you're going to have the UNC and LSU pro days back to back. We'll talk about those on next week's show. We had the Caleb Williams pro day this past week. So, Tony, why don't we kind of start there? It seemed to be, and I think I like the way Daniel Jeremiah put it the other day on the Move the Sticks podcast, it was a proof of life pro day where nothing crazy, didn't do anything fancy, just, yep, my arm still works, I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, it was solid. It wasn't spectacular. You know, scouts weren't standing around applauding like they had in the past. And, you know, I heard he, you know, some of the deeper passes sometimes fluttered. It was solid. People came out of it and told me that, you know, he deserves to be the first pick of the draft, but they weren't awed by it. I know he did a lot of passing in the pocket to show that he can throw within the pocket. Now, how you do that in shorts and t-shirt, how you do that, I don't know. You know, but it was a nice workout. It wasn't a great, you know, knock you over workout, which is fine. I mean, that's what these are. They're scripted. He's throwing to receivers that he's basically been playing with the past 3 years in an environment that he's friendly, that he's practiced in the last 3 years. I'm sorry, 2 years. He affirmed himself as the first pick of the draft, but he didn't blow anybody away.
You hear anything else about some of the other guys at the LSU USC Pro Day, the wide receivers, Marshawn Lloyd, anything like that?
So I heard Lloyd looked phenomenal catching the ball out of the backfield, again, as best as he could. I think he had like 17 receptions last year. They really didn't use him as a target. He wanted to prove that he could catch the ball in the backfield, showed soft hands. I think with something like that, you want to show that you're not fighting the ball. You can make the reception in stride, adjusting to the pass. Added, you know, that additional talent to his arsenal. And I think Lloyd's a guy that can probably go earlier than a lot of people expect, especially in a, you know, a running back class where, you know, it's kind of who's at the top and where are they going to fall?
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's jump over to Alabama, Tony. Always a big highlight pro day for them. My understanding is Terrion Arnold ran or exactly pretty much where he did it at the combine. So no changes there. But Kool-Aid McKinstry ran on a broken foot and was pretty good.
4.47 from what I was told. Looked decent. I mean, I think McKinstry is kind of the forgotten man here. We talk about Terrion Arnold. We talk about Quinyon Mitchell. We talk about Nate Wiggins from Clemson with his 40 time. McKinstry's been a good cornerback in the past 2 years, and for him to go out there and run the 4.47 with the Jones fracture in the foot, I think says a lot about him. I think he's going to be a solid mid to bottom third of round one cornerback.
All right, let's stick in the SEC here, Tony. Go down to Florida, where one player stood out to you.
Your guy, the guy that you really like a lot. Kingsley Ekubon, the center. I'm looking at his times here as a reporter on Sports Gita, 7'3 in the three cone, 4'4 in the short shuttle, touched 32 inches in the vertical jump, looked athletic, moved well, and really in a class where there's one guy, Jackson Powers Johnson, who's probably going to go somewhere in the middle of round one. After that, you know, it's sort of maybe anybody's guess, and there's an opportunity for Ekubon to move into that late part of day two.
Now, Tony, was he not at the combine at all? Like, was he not invited?
No, he was at the combine.
Okay, but
I mean, he was invited to the combine. I can pull up the. I don't know what he did, but
yeah, I don't think he worked out on the field. So maybe he didn't do workouts, but maybe he was there. I could be wrong about that.
Could have been. I mean, that the offensive line workout was Sunday, and it started late. And to be honest with you, I watched the first set of position drills, and then I had to leave to catch my flight late Sunday afternoon. So as we are talking, I am pulling it up, and sure enough, there he is. No workout, right hamstring issue.
Okay. Yeah, I knew he didn't present. I watched this. I just sit there and watch 8 hours of offensive line workouts on TV. It was thrilling, yeah. Let me tell you. I did not see him work out. And since I wasn't there for the media interviews, I wasn't sure if he was invited or if he just didn't work out. So it's good to know.
He was there. He benched 20. He completed 26 reps on the bench with 32 and a half inch arms.
Got it. Perfect. All right. Let's go to Missouri now. Two guys jumped out to you. Ennis Rackestraw, who did not work out at the combine much. And then you had Jalen Carlisle, who I'm not familiar with. Tell me about him.
Well, yeah, Rackestraw didn't jump out. I'll get to that in a second. But Carlisle is a guy, was a safety at Missouri, 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", played safety, ran 7.03 at the 7.03 in the three cone, which is a terrific time for a guy that size. Worked out at both linebacker and safety position drills during pro day. It's probably going to be a day three pick, but again, he's one of those oversized college safeties that's going to be used as a one gap linebacker. I think really helped himself, showed some versatility. Rakestraw, on the other hand, you know, here's a guy that is falling down draft boards. It's an interesting story. There were some people, not me, that had him mocked in the first round, basically prior to the combine. Goes to the combine. I believe he ran a 4.51 at 183 pounds. He's got some injury issues. And there are some issues with Rakestraw as to – Missouri scouts, Missouri coaches were very upset that he ran – he ran a 4.59 at his pro day. He had a 1.56 10-yard split, which is terribly slow. He had a 4.38 shuttle. He hasn't run the three cone. He had core muscle injury surgery, sports hernia surgery. You and I just know as a hernia surgery. He had that at the end of the season. I think he played 9 games last year. People like his press coverage skills. But again, this was a guy who just a couple of months ago, people were considering in the late part of round one. Missouri coaches were telling people that NFL scouts say Rakestraw is going to go in the fourth round. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think he's a guy who could fall into the third round because of the injury issue, not just the hernia surgery from late last year, but in 2001, he had an ACL, which cut short his season after just 4 games. Not the biggest guy in the world. I mean, if you're going to run in the 4.5, you usually want your cornerbacks to be 6 foot, 6 foot one, 205 pounds. He's not that big. Very good in press coverage, but a lot of concerns about Rakestraw as we move towards the draft.
Yeah, I wonder with that speed if he ends up getting put into the slot rather than being an outside guy too at that size. We'll have to see how they have to handle that. By the way, later in the show, I should have mentioned this at the top. We're going to do some fan questions, and we're going to go through how AFC team needs change on free agency. I should have teased that earlier, but I didn't, so I just did right now. Michigan, they had their pro day, Tony. I have it all queued up. I'm going to go through the McCarthy passes a little bit later today. What did you think about it?
I'm going to make a prediction here, and my prediction is the LA Chargers are going to win the Super Bowl within 3 years. Now, why do I say that? Because everybody I talked to about all the players at Michigan just raved about the football intellect of these players, whether it be J.J. McCarthy, Mike Sanishrill, Jalen Harrell, Roman Wilson. They all just raved about the way these guys interviewed and their intellect, their football intellect, how they just get it between the ears. J.J. McCarthy had a real nice throwing workout. There are some concerns about his arm strength. I talked to one scout there who asked me, what do you think about his arm strength? I was like, yeah, it's okay. And he agreed with me. But again, just tremendous interviews with McCarthy, and he hit his passes. Mike Sanishrill, I heard, had a phenomenal workout, not just as a defensive back, but also ran receiver drills, caught like 15 passes, looked great, also returned punts, ran a 3.91 in the short shuttle, a 6.84 in the three cone. And during interviews, I was told he came across as a genius. When they talked to him about football, diagramming plays, and came across as a genius.
And by the way, if you watch his tape, it shows. He always knows where the ball's going. He is a smart player on the field.
Roman Wilson, 3.99 in the short shuttle, 6.75 in the three cone, caught everything that was thrown to him. I think that you're looking at Roman Wilson right now as a bottom half of round two sort of player. Jalen Harrell, 4.68 at the at Pro Day, which is one to get under that 4.7 mark. He did. I think the only concerning news out of Michigan is Junior Colson has not run. He was injured. He didn't run the combine. He didn't run a pro day. I've not heard that he's going to try and do a workout to run before the draft. So that was really the only negative news coming out of Michigan pro day.
Yeah, a lot of really good players coming out of that Michigan pro day. I'll leave the Big 12 pro day for last here, Tony. A couple of schools let's talk about real quick. Florida State, you wanted to feature Keon Coleman here.
No three cone, no shuttles, sat on his combine 40 time, 4.61, caught the ball very well. But again, Keon Coleman, you know, you go back to our shows in October, November, when scouts were talking about him potentially being the second receiver selected. Yeah. You know, now you look at Keon Coleman as basically a contested throw guy. Yeah, he catches the ball well. He's got great size, but without that three cone, without that short shuttle, he doesn't look like a great route runner. It's looked like a bad route runner, but it's looked like a really great route runner. So now you're looking at a bigger contested throw guy who, when you look at the way the other receivers have performed, I just talked about Roman Wilson, you're looking at Keon Coleman, who a lot of people project as a potential first-round pick, now being more than likely a bottom half of round two guy.
Yeah, I think kind of a big possession receiver. With some downfield contested catchability. I'm with you, Tony. And not to promote ourselves, but if you listen to us back in October, to your point, Tony, we were telling you that, and now everyone else seems to be catching up to it a little bit. And again, I think round two, I think good value, right, for the type of receiver that he is. But I think mid-round one, which is what the conversation was, is a little bit rich.
Listen, Notre Dame. If you're the New York Giants and you have smaller receivers – and you're looking for that one big guy, especially in the red zone on third down, why wouldn't you look at Keon Coleman, you know, sometime, you know, later in round two or early part of round three if he happens to slide to you?
Yeah, Tony, Giants pick 47th, right in the middle of round two. If they pick, you know, Joe Alt or quarterback in round one and they decide, look, we want Keon Coleman to, you know, be the change of pace to the Wandale Robinson and Jalen Hyde, I think it makes a lot of sense. So I'm 100% with you. There's nothing bad about the player. It's just getting him slotted in the right area where value is going to meet in the draft. Notre Dame, your thoughts?
You know, all I heard was rave reviews about Joe Walt. I mean, they said he looks like a monster out there, 6'8 and a half, 320 pounds, but he moves incredibly well. The term that was used to me to describe Joe Walt at Pro Day was bendy. You know, he's not a big, stiff guy, although I've had my concerns with that. And I've said it on the show. You look at the Louisville film, he struggles to adjust, but he didn't show that during pro day. Audric Estime, a guy who I've knocked on the show a couple times, I heard ran very well, ran under 4.6. Combine time was 4.71, moved very well during position drills. So good for him. He's probably recovered some of his draft stock that he lost in Indianapolis.
So I'm going to bring fans behind the scenes here. So Tony sent me a list of schools and players you want to talk about from each school. And my favorite part of the list, Tony, you have Texas up next. And you don't have Xavier Worthy on your list. You have James Worthy
there
on
you
your
go.
List. I'm like, we can talk some 80s Lakers if you want. I love it.
There you go. You know, sometimes you have a senior moment, I guess you call it. But Xavier, you know, there was a massive turnout at Michigan Pro Day. There was a massive turnout at Texas Pro Day. I was told 96 general managers, college directors, head coaches, position coaches at the Texas Pro Day. A lot of good things, but I heard Xavier Worthy caught the ball incredibly well. And that's the thing about Xavier Worthy is, you know, you watch him on film, he does drop some catchable passes. He's not known for having the strongest hands, but he surprised everybody the way he extended his hands and plucked the ball out of the air. We all know about the 4-2-1. He plays that fast. You know, now he's got to show that he's got those strong hands, you know, in the game when the ball's kicked off for real. But people were very impressed with his pass catching ability. Again, the strong hands. And Quinn Ewers, who's going to be a top rated quarterback in the 2025 draft, was throwing darts, and Worthy was just plucking them out of the air.
Yeah, one. I just want to comment on Worthy here, Tony, because I think he's interesting. You know, he didn't have any drop issues this year, but he did have drop issues in his 2022 season, his 2022 tape. Then it was later revealed he played with almost like a broken hand that year, so that might explain some of the drop issues. And I just think it's interesting when I went back and I rewatched a little bit of Worthy last week, and I have a filter where I could just watch all his 20-plus yard plays. Despite the 4-2-1 speed, he didn't catch many deep balls this year. It's very weird for a guy at that speed. You don't see him constantly behind the defense catching deep balls. Maybe it's, you know, Ewers doesn't have the biggest arm in the world. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe they're throwing to A.D. Mitchell. They're running it, whatever. He didn't have as many over-the-top plays as I thought he would. He did 2 years ago when he had the drop issues in 2022. But this past year, I just didn't feel like there were as many plays over the top as I thought there would be.
Well, they had a good running game. You know, you mentioned A.D. Mitchell. They also had Jordan Whittington there, and they had Tavian Sanders, so they had a lot of weapons. You know, remember that deep catch that he made against Alabama, the over-the-shoulder catch, which was like 50 yards downfield, where he had to track the pass in the air, over the shoulder, had to adjust for the touchdown. That was a magnificent reception.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good deep threat. Do you think there's any chance he sneaks into the bottom of round one, Tony, or you think he's a round two guy?
You know, I think the Chiefs would be a perfect place for him. But the only thing is the Chiefs need an offensive tackle. So I think he's more of a early round two guy, primarily because I think there's going to be so many offensive tackles that go in round one. Guys like Worthy, who could justifiably be a first round pick, get pushed out.
All right. Colorado State, and I'm not even going to attempt this name, Tony. I haven't seen this name before, so I'm going to let you embarrass yourself, and I'm just going to laugh at you. Go ahead.
There you go. Chigi Anousium. Now, the cornerback from Colorado State. I'm not going to say that again, so don't even ask me to. I remember watching him when he was at Cal, and he caught my eye because he would make plays, you know, sporadically, but he showed decent ball skills. Showed up at Colorado Pro Day. He was also at the Shrine Game. We saw him at the Shrine Game. 6'1", 200 pounds, 7% body fat, ran in the anywhere from 4.34 to 4.38. Had a 37.5-inch vertical jump. The guy is an outstanding athlete. He's shown solid ball skills. He never really progressed the way I thought he should have. But with that size and those numbers and that ability that he's displayed in the past, very good chance now where he was an undrafted PFA type. You get late in the rounds, you get deep in the draft, in a draft that's not really deep later on. They look towards the size speed guys. Anousium is a guy from Colorado State, especially at the cornerback position, that I think teams could look at. He may have cemented himself as a very late round pick.
All right, then Tony, finally, this is a little look ahead, and we'll cover this on next week's show after it gets completed. But Big 12's having their like conference pro day this week. How is this even working?
It's not. I mean, it's not as of right now. It hasn't even started, and there's a lot of complaints. I have the schedule here, and I think they're basically running it like a mini combine, and it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday where they're running it position groups. And it's basically like the combine. They'll do the testing. They'll do the position drills. They'll have time for interviews, and it's at the Ford Center. It's at the Jerry Jones, the Dallas Cowboys facility in Frisco, Texas, where we were at for the Shrine Bowl. And Big 12 teams were not allowed to have their own individual pro days, because they're going to have this group Big 12 Pro Day. And people were saying, oh, this is the shape, this is the wave of the future, this is the way it's going to go. You're not going to have these individual Pro Days. It hasn't even started, and there have been problems. Scouts don't like it because they don't feel they're going to have enough one-on-one time with the players. It's going to be too controlled the way the combine is. And they don't like that. They like to have the more casual meetings, sit downs, dinners with the players. That's not going to be allowed. That they're not going to have that at the Big 12 Pro Day. The schools, the colleges are already complaining because the colleges have said it's actually cheaper for us, University of Cincinnati, to have our own Pro Day rather than send three or four guys out to Dallas, pay for the travel, pay for their housing, pay for their food and everything. We'd rather have our own Pro Day. And the sad thing is the last group goes through Saturday night and they're going to fly them home on Easter Sunday morning. So if any of these guys celebrate the Easter holiday, you know, they're going to miss out. So it hasn't started. We'll have to wait and see. There's a huge list of players because remember, these are not just combine players. This is any draft eligible player.
A lot of guys
wants to participate, that wants to work out. And sometimes it's a little, if you've ever been to these pro day workouts, sometimes you get guys there who work out who really shouldn't be on the field, but they're given the opportunity. So you get massive amounts of guys who are going to work out, combine guys, non-combine guys, guys that, you know, maybe coaching high school football, God bless them for, basically giving the old college try, but they really shouldn't be on the field. And we'll have to wait and see. People, when this was announced, thought this is going to be the wave of the future. The feedback I'm getting right now before it's even started is no way.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think. Love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top of
that. I'm not guarding like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't me?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Draft season is brought to you by Moody's. Decode risk, unlock opportunity. All right, Tony, let's get into our AFC team needs here as affected by what happened in free agency. Obviously, a lot of moves. If you want to know about the NFC team needs and ideal picks, basically, we'll kind of pick an ideal pick for each one of these teams with their first pick in the draft. Go to last week's show where we covered the entire NFC. All right, Tony, let's go start the AFC East. We'll kind of just go division by division here. I put it in order of which the divisions finished last week in terms of standings. So the Buffalo Bills, boy, they just lost a lot of players, Tony. They had a lot of salary cap issues. They were something like $30 or $40 million over. So they had to find a lot of money. So they let go of Gabe Davis, Leonard Floyd, Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morse, Tre'Davious White, Cam Lewis, Sharon Neal, Mike Edwards. And then you go to the Buffalo Bills. They only added Mitch Trubisky, Nicholas Morrow, and Curtis Samuel. So you take a look at this group, Tony, and I looked at their, you know, roster and their depth chart. I think cornerback is a pretty big need for them. Wide receivers in need. And then they're always trying to shore up the trenches up there in Buffalo. So I think defensive line and offensive line are also areas where they could address.
Yeah, you guys, if Ryan Thomas Jr. happens to fall to them, I think that's a perfect pick. He's basically a faster version of Gabe Davis. You know, Troy Franklin of Oregon has got to be a consideration. You're looking at cornerback, maybe DeJean Cooper, if they believe he is worth that pick.
Cooper DeJean.
I think that would also be a consideration.
I think your man Kool-Aid, too, at 28, Tony. If he's the only corner left, I could see him being a good fit there, too.
If he's there, absolutely.
All right, let's go to Miami Dolphins here. A lot of additions and subtractions for them. They were also managing some salary cap issues. They lost their starting guard, Robert Hunt, starting defensive tackle, Christian Wilkins, Brandon Jones, one of their edge players, Andrew Van Ginkle, Jerome Baker, Emmanuel Ogba, and Xavien Howard, a long list of guys that they lost, especially off that defense. And then they added Shaq Barrett, Jordan Poyer, Jonnu Smith, Anthony Walker, linebacker Jordan Brooks, cornerback Kendall Fuller, and center Aaron Brewer. Tony, I think this is interior offensive line spot that you want to focus on here for the Dolphins. For me, I can see them also adding at the tight end of defensive line spots. But They picked 21st in the first round. The Bills were at 28, by the way. I think this could be a Jackson Powers Johnson. I think Graham Barton might be a little bit of a better fit, though, based on how they play in terms of a lot of their run style with Mike McDaniel.
Either of those players. I mean, we'll talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers, which may take Jackson Powers Johnson and swipe him away from the Miami Dolphins. But Graham Barton is building some momentum into the first round. You want to protect Tua. You got to basically get a guy up and center who can protect him in pass protection. So if it's not Jackson Powers Johnson, I think it's going to be Graham Barton. I'm not as high on Graham Barton as other people. I love Jackson Powers Johnson. I see a big separation between the two. And remember, Graham Barton was a tackle. He's projected to be a center. Okay, it's not like he's got a guy who in college did a lot of snapping.
I agree. I have Powers Johnson ahead of Graham Barton on my board as well. I'm with you on that. All right, let's go to the Jets. Tony, they try to shore up the offensive line. John Simpson, Tyron Smith, Morgan Moses, all inbound, older veterans, specifically Smith and Moses. They're both over 30. Also added Javon Kinlaw, the underachieving defensive tackle that hasn't been able to stay healthy. Cornerback Isaiah Oliver. For a first-round pick, was he, Tony, late first or early second? And then Leki Fotu. And their only real loss was Bryce Huff. At edge. And to me, Tony, this is an offensive pick. You want to surround Aaron Rodgers, and this is going to relate back to one of our Twitter questions. So I guess I'll kind of throw this out there as you do the needs here. This question came in from Jeets, speculation on Jets, offensive tackle versus wide receiver versus tight end here. For me, their ideal scenario is a guy like Roma Dunze drops to them at 10. How do you think the Jets will try to figure out what they're going to do with that 10th overall pick and what their biggest need is?
Yeah, Isaiah Oliver was the second round pick. I mean, there are a lot of scenarios for the New York Jets, and they're all good. I mean, the Jets will have to go out of their way to really mess this up, more so than they did a year ago when they took Will McDonald 10 picks before he should have gone and passed up on Jackson Smith and Jigba, which would have been a big help. But I think you got to wait and see. I think it's got Dunze's there. I know for a fact, and I reported from Georgia Pro Day, that Brock Bowers is in the conversation. Also Fashanu, because, Tyron Smith, their offensive line right now is better than it was a year ago, but it's still, there's a very thin margin of error. And, it can implode at any second. And Tyron Smith, you got him for a year. If Fashanu's there, you could have a potentially outstanding left tackle for the next 10 years. Granted, they're looking at 2024. So I think all of those guys. I also think that if J.J. McCarthy falls down to 10, they could trade with Denver. They could maybe finagle something with Minnesota and still get the player that they want. I think it's all good for the Jets. They're going to have to go out of their way to mess it up. I think it could be Dunze if he's there. I think it could be Brock Bowers. I know he's in the conversation. I think a tackle like Fashanu also is in the conversation.
100% agree, Tony. We cannot be more aligned on that. Exactly what you said. All right, final and AFC East team, pardon me, New England Patriots. They're really starting from scratch here, Tony. They lose Mac Jones, Mike Gesicki, Mac Wilson, the linebacker, Matthew Slater retired, wide receiver Devontae Parker, cornerback J.C. Jackson were let go. They add Jacoby Brissett, Antonio Gibson, Austin Hooper, Sean Takitaki, Chukwuma Okorafor, and K.J. Osborne. And if you take a look at this, Tony, they just have a lot of needs at three. It starts with quarterback. They tried to sign Calvin Ridley. They failed. They need a wide receiver. They could use an offensive tackle. To me, they can go a lot of different ways here, but you have a hole like this at quarterback. I think if I'm New England, I'm sitting there, a big arm guy like Drake May, that's the type of guy to me you want playing in the Northeast in some potential bad weather. So that's who I have as the ideal pick for them at number three.
The question is, do they believe in Drake May? Do they think that he is their quarterback of the future? If the answer is yes, and it kind of went back and forth, I was getting different feelings at the combine. If the answer is yes, then it's Drake May. Otherwise, it could be Marvin Harrison Jr.
Absolutely, and that would not – or a trade down potentially too, depending on what the Patriots want to do. All right, AFC North, Tony, Baltimore Ravens. Had a lot of losses this offseason. Two starting offensive linemen, Morgan Moses and John Simpson. Odell Beckham Jr. no longer there. Running back Gus Edwards. Safety Geno Stone. Edge rusher Tyus Bowser. Linebacker Patrick Queen. And their only big addition was running back Derrick Henry. So I think you're looking at a big offensive line here need from your Tony. And I have Tyler Guyton here as potential best player available. Pick number 30. He played right tackle in college. You can kind of slide him right in there. On the other side of Ronnie Stanley, who obviously is a still good left tackle when he's healthy. So that's kind of how I look at the Ravens right now.
Yeah, I would agree. I know that they like Jordan Morgan, and they feel that Jordan Morgan can be a right tackle. I have my questions about that. I think Jordan Morgan is more of your left tackle, even a guard prospect. But I know that they like Jordan Morgan. I think the other guy, because they like the draft defense, I think Darius Robinson of Missouri. This is a place where he could end up in the first round. He's a great system fit for them, a guy with a lot of upside. But I think it's going to be on the lines of scrimmage.
Yeah, very Ravens type of player. I'm with him. They can always use their second round pick on a wide receiver. Somebody would be there if they want to pick that player in the second round. You know, Baltimore, Tony, someone always drops to them that shouldn't, and they'll end up with a great player no matter where they end up picking. That's just how it works for Baltimore. Let's go to Cleveland, Tony. Only a couple losses. Sean Takitaki, Anthony Walker, Mike Ford. They had Jerry Jeudy, Jameis Winston, Donta Foreman, Jordan Hicks, Quentin Jefferson, Devin Bush, Mo Hurst. And I got to be honest, Tony, look, they don't have a first pick this year still from that Deshaun Watson trade, the gift that keeps on giving. So they don't pick again until 45 in this draft. And their roster is complete. I mean, it's really impressive. It's a good roster. So I just have best player available here. I think the Browns are in a situation, Tony, whatever the best player is at 45, you pick them. I don't see a serious need when I look at their depth chart.
And they got an outstanding coach who did a great job last year when everything was was falling apart. I think that they would – I would agree with you. I think they wouldn't mind another playmaker there, whether it be a receiver, a guy like Jalen McMillan, whether it be sort of that situational sort of back, you know, a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield in the second or third round. I think it's going to be an offensive pick. But you're right. It's heading in the right direction, and they showed last year they were able to do it or get some mileage, even though Deshaun Watson wasn't healthy for the full year.
All right, let's jump over to the Pittsburgh Steelers. A couple quarterbacks added to the roster, Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. They also had linebacker Patrick Queens poaching him from the Ravens. Dante Jackson, Van Jefferson, Deshaun Elliott. They lose Deontay Johnson, who they traded away, Kenny Pickett, Mitch Trubisky, and Chukwuma Okorafor. And Tony, with that Deontay Johnson trade, to me, this is a wide receiver, or it's an offensive tackle. They drafted Broderick Jones last year. I can see them slotting him over to left tackle, drafting a right tackle. So I have here Amarius Mims. They can get the Georgia bookends at offensive tackle at pick number 20 for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I could see them being in the Brian Thomas Jr. business as well.
Or Jackson Powers Johnson. I mean, they got Nate Herbig as their starting center right now. I think Jackson Powers Johnson is very much a Steelers player. He's tough. He's nasty.
It's a good one.
He's also smart. The block on the second level. I think it's going to be an offensive lineman, but I'm going to lean towards Jackson Powers Johnson right here.
Okay, very good. And I'll throw J.C. Latham out there, too, if they're looking for a right tackle. He could be there at pick 20, could be a good pick for them as well. Very Steelers type of player. All right, let's go to the Cincinnati Bengals. They have a couple big additions. Geno Stone, Zach Moss, Mike Gesicki, Trent Brown, Von Bell, Sheldon Rankins, Cody Ford. They lose Joe Mixon, Chidobe Awuzie, the corner, and offensive tackle Jonah Williams. He was obviously, a guy that was lost a little earlier in the process. To me, Tony, I think they need a right tackle. I think they could use a cornerback here. I have J.C. Latham down as a guy that I think kind of fits at 18 that, can play right tackle. You can plug him right in there to try to protect Joe Burrow a little bit.
Either him or Fuega. I mean, if Fuega makes it down there, which I think he could, I have got Fuega rated higher than J.C. Latham. I also have Amarius Mims rated higher than J.C. Latham, and both are terrific right tackle prospects.
Yeah, I think Mims would be perfect here, too. I just didn't want to have the same guy two picks in a row with the Steelers and the Bengals. Yeah, my thought was that Fuanga wouldn't get back this far, but if he does, I agree. I think that could be an ideal pick for them as well. AFC South, Houston Texans. They add Joe Mixon, Danielle Hunter, Denico Autry, Azeez Al-Shaair, Lonnie Johnson, C.J. Henderson, and Farkasi, the defensive tackle. They lose Devin Singletary, pass rusher Jonathan Greenard. Blake Cashman, Malik Collins, all on defense. Tony, the Texans, they got it for a young team. They're pretty talented. I see defensive tackle, maybe a right tackle here to, I don't know how, what they think of Titus Howard in terms of long-term at right tackle. And then maybe a nickel corner. Remember, they traded out of the first round with the Vikings, so they don't pick until pick 42. And I have Kamari Lassiter down for them just because I think that's a corner that could realistically be there. I think he could fit into the slot where they need a little bit of help on defense. Your thoughts for the Texans at 42, who I think, you know, are pretty flexible in terms of the type of guy they could pick.
Yeah, and I think that they really filled a lot of needs in free agency. I mean, you looked at the pass rushing need, Danielle Hunter, they had defensive tackle needs, they filled those. They had a cornerback needs, they filled them. I think what you want to do is maybe give C.J. Stroud another playmaker. Quintez Walker of North Carolina is there to you. I think that would be another, you know, another playmaker to help C.J. Stroud if you want to fortify some fortify the offensive line. Roger Rosengarten in the middle of round two, I think that's a perfect fit for him. I think he's got a lot of upside. Best football's ahead of him.
Yeah, and he's a right tackle as well, and he can plug right into that spot. All right, Jacksonville Jaguars, Tony, weird offseason for them. They had Mac Jones in a trade, wide receiver Gabe Davis, center Mitch Morse, Darnell Savage, the safety slot combo, defensive tackle Arik Armstead on board. They lose Darius Williams, Calvin Ridley, kicker Brandon McManus, and Foley Fadakasi, that defensive tackle we mentioned earlier. They let him go. He was a big signing for them a couple years ago. And Tony, they tried to sign Calvin Ridley. They failed. That was a big loss for them. In terms of wide receiver. So I think they kind of have to look that direction, right, in terms of the draft here. I don't know if they have enough in that spot in terms of making big plays down the field for Trevor Lawrence. So I think this is an A.D. Mitchell, Brian Thomas Jr. type of landing spot in the middle of the round. Though I could see them going corner as well.
Yeah, maybe Troy Franklin, because he's got a little bit more speed. They did sign Gabe Davis. So you want guys that can basically break it downfield. Would they take Xavier Worthy? It's a little bit early, but it wouldn't surprise me because he's a true game breaker. You want to give Trevor Lawrence as many more weapons as you want. If Quinnon Mitchell's there, Terry and Arnold, those would also be solid picks to fill in the need at cornerback.
Yep, absolutely. I'm with you on that. All right, let's jump over to the Indianapolis Colts. They add Joe Flacco, re-sign a lot of their own guys. They lose Gardner Minshew, Zach Moss, Isaiah McKenzie, Tony. To me, corner and wide receiver here, I think this is a perimeter player for them. I think with Gus Bradley there, they like to play a lot of zone. I think Quinnion Mitchell is really a guy that would be ideal. He plays the ball really well. He played a lot of off coverage in college. I think he could slide in. He might not get to 15 for them. That's where they pick. The Jaguars are at 17, by the way, if I didn't mention that. I think Mitchell would be a really good fit for them if they go corner.
Or Terry and Arnold, because, you know, you watch the tape on Terry and Arnold. He basically played back off the line of scrimmage, primarily at nickelback in Alabama. Now, they do have a good, very good nickelback in Kenny Moore. But still, if you're going to play that zone off the ball type of coverage, I like Terry and Arnold. I think Quinnen Mitchell showed us a lot in press coverage at the Senior Bowl.
He did. He did. That's he showed he could do it. So interesting to see, and Moore was one of the players they did re-sign, by the way, the Colts, to a fairly lucrative contract in free agency. It was a nice contract for an older corner that plays inside. All right, Tennessee Titans, Tony, they sign a lot of players to fill some holes here. Tony Pollard, center Lloyd Cushenberry, corner Chidobe Awuzie, Calvin Ridley, the wide receiver, linebacker Kenneth Murray, and then backup quarterback Mason Rudolph. They lose Denitro Autry, Aaron Brewer, Azeez Al-Shaair, Sean Murphy bunting the corner, and of course, Derrick Henry at running back. I mean, I just have offensive tackle circled as a huge need here, Tony, and their best scenario for them is Joe Alt gets them at 7 and they get their top offensive tackle. So that's my ideal pick for them.
I think after the top two cornerbacks, I think Joe Alt going 7 to Tennessee is probably the one that every mock drafter is going to have, right? Because it just makes so much sense. He's the guy who's going to come in and start right away, and it fills a massive need.
Yeah, we had to protect Will Levis, who they're trying to give a chance to here, a quarterback, their second-round pick last season.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all. But I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because he didn't need it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, final division here, AFC West, Tony. We've gotten through these pretty quickly. I think we've done a pretty good job here. Chiefs, they've added Marquise Brown, Irv Smith Jr. Good teams, not very loud in free agency to be understood. They re-signed Chris Jones. They have to trade Legarius Sneed away, get just a third-round pick back for him. I thought they'd get a better return for him than that, to be honest with you, Tone. They also lose linebacker Willie Gay and offensive lineman Nick Allegretti. To me, this is either offensive tackle or corner. Offensive tackle or wide receiver, Tony, pardon me. They could also do a cornerback here because of the loss of Legarius Sneed. So I think they're fortunate in that their three big needs, Tony, go back to three of the better positions in this draft. So I think the Chiefs are in a good spot here to just pick at 32 and pick whichever best player is at those three positions. But I wrote A.D. Mitchell down here just because I think a sweet spot for wide receivers is at the end of the first round. You know, they brought in Marquise Brown as a speed guy. They have Rashee Rice, who's to me is more of a Z than an X, but A.D. Mitchell can be that number one X wide receiver that I think would really fill out that wide receiver core well.
I'm going to go with Jordan Morgan if he's there, because I'm just not going to rely on Wayne Morris, who was a third-round pick last year, who's a solid player, just to protect the blind side. And I even think there's going to be some bumps in the road with Jordan Morgan. But I think Jordan Morgan's upside, the athleticism, the size, he's an outstanding pass protector. And he's a mobile offensive lineman, a good system fit. I agree with you about the receiver need, but, you know, you better be able to protect your franchise and Patrick Mahomes.
No, I'm with you, Tony. I just wonder if he's going to make it to him. You know, I just wonder about these offensive tackles and how quickly they're going to go. So I'm with you. If they pick an offensive tackle there, I think it'd be a fantastic pick. I'm with you. Las Vegas Raiders, Tony. They add Christian Wilkins, a defensive tackle, Harrison Bryant at tight end, Gardner Minshew, a quarterback. Not starter level money, but high end backup competition for starter money. They lose Josh Jacobs, Jermaine Illuminor, and Amik Robinson, the cornerback. And it's funny, when we talked about the Browns, we talked about how they have a very complete roster. Boy, the Raiders, they have a lot of holes to fill, Tony. You look at this roster, I have needs quarterback, offensive line, cornerback, slot wide receiver, running back. There's just so many needs here, but quarterback's the biggest one, and I just think Jaden Daniels, given his relationship with Antonio Pierce, just he feels like a Raiders quarterback to me. If they could figure out a way to trade up from 13 to get him, that would be the ideal pick for me. Otherwise, the Raiders, I think, just pick the best player at the most important position. If they stick and pick at 13, offensive tackle maybe, and you really can't go wrong.
I'd be shocked if there's any chance for them to move up to get one of the quarterbacks, especially Jaden Daniels. I'd be shocked. You know,
me too.
Maybe Fuega, who I mentioned earlier with the Bengals, or maybe Maris Mims. I think this is a little bit early for Tyler Guyton. You could see the first cornerback come off here, and Quentin Mitchell, he's very much a Raiders type of player. But I think it'll be offensive tackle or cornerback.
Yeah, I agree. And those are two premium spots that'll be loaded at those positions when they pick at 13 if they can't figure out a way to go get that quarterback. Speaking of going to get a quarterback, Denver Broncos, Tony. Yeah. They add Brandon Jones and Malcolm Roach. Yes, that's as short of a list as it seems. They lose Russell Wilson by choice. Justin Simmons, who still hasn't signed anybody yet, by the way, the all-pro caliber safety. Center Lloyd Cushenberry. They trade away Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver. They lose linebacker Josie Jewell. They have needed quarterback, cornerback, edge rusher, some pretty premium positions. And again, to me, this is a team that's going to try really hard. And Sean Payton basically said as much at the owner meetings, brutally honest. So yeah, there's a really good chance we're going to try to pick a quarterback here. So I think if they could figure out a way to get, you know, the Drake May or J.J. McCarthy, that would be great. And if they go quarterback later, I think Bo Nix kind of fits that Sean Payton quarterback mold that he kind of has had before in a Drew Brees type.
Forget about what he said at the owner's meetings. I recorded from the Shrine Bowl that he was desperate to move up and get one of the top quarterbacks. And I reported from the Combine that he loves J.J. McCarthy. The only problem is he's got the Minnesota Vikings ahead of him. The Minnesota Vikings have two first-round picks, so the Minnesota Vikings have more ammunition to move up, if need be, and get that fourth quarterback. I would agree with you. I think the quarterback that he loves, or I was told and reported, the quarterback that Sean Payton loves at the Combine is J.J. McCarthy. Who else could it be? If Brock Bowers is there, they have a huge need at the tight end position. Payton's had a lot of success with playmaking tight ends. I think he scoops Brock Bowers off the board at 12 if he can't get the quarterback. And Brock Bowers is going to make whatever second-rate quarterback is starting for the Denver Broncos better in 2024.
I would keep an eye on the edge rushers, too, at that spot. Sean Payton, when he was with the Saints, loved to pick big guys. So they really don't have a whole lot coming off the edge there in Denver. So keep an eye on that, too. Final team, Tony, the Los Angeles Chargers. Besides their new head coach, Jim Harbaugh, they also add Denzel Perryman, Bradley Bozeman, Gus Edwards, Will Disley. They lose, boy, listen to this list on offense, Tony. Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Austin Eckler, Gerald Everett, and then on defense, Kenneth Murray. Chargers sitting pretty with the fifth overall pick here. And their best case scenario to me, Tony, if they don't trade down, is that four quarterbacks go 1 through 4 and Marvin Harrison Jr. staring them right in the face.
Well, somebody's going to have to trade up with Arizona. I don't know. And Arizona's going to have to pass up on Marvin Harrison Jr. You know, in my opinion, all along, and I agree with you about the trade down. I think this is where it will happen.
I agree.
You know, do they take Joe Alt at 5 to put him on the right side? I think Brock Bowers is the perfect fit here. They got Will Disley and Hayden Hurst as their number one and number two tight ends. You talk about a playmaker for Justin Herbert. What Malik Nabers, I know they drafted Quentin Johnston last year. He's been up and down, but Malik Nabers, I think, again, you know, like I said with the Jets, I see a lot, nothing but good options for the Jets. I see nothing but even better options for the Chargers at 5.
Yeah, I mean, if the Cardinals stick and pick at 4, Tony, the Chargers are going to be a team that has so many other GMs calling them to try to move up to 5 to get that fourth quarterback. And they are going to play the Broncos off of the Vikings, off of the Raiders, all these teams that need a quarterback. And if they decide to move down, they are going to get an absolute haul.
You would think so. And you would think the team that has the haul that's got the most would be the Minnesota Vikings with those two first round picks. So I think this, I don't think the Cardinals are going to trade down. I think they made a great trade last year. They got two first-round picks. I think you're going to really have to blow the Cardinals away to trade down to 4. I think Marvin Harrison makes just too much sense there. And then the fireworks start at pick number 5.
And again, I have no idea what the Giants are thinking at the quarterback position. I don't think they know what they're thinking at the quarterback position yet either. If the Chargers decide, look, we want to move down a little bit. Right? Get a little bit of a bonus. Just slide down one spot to 6. Giants move up one spot to draft somebody. Then the Chargers can get one of the players we talked about and pick up like a second round pick or something like that as the price of doing business. So a lot of options there for the Los Angeles Chargers. Draft season is brought to you by Moody's. Decode risk, unlock opportunity. Visit Moody's.com to learn more. All right, Tony, we got some questions from the fans. We really got some good ones. I had to pare these down. I thought we got some excellent questions here. So here we go. And we'll do one or two more of these as we get closer to the draft, too. This one from at Alaska Mac. Any whispers on what the league thinks about Kingsley Suamatia?
Late first round choice. I don't think he's working out a Big 12 pro day. I think he's going to skip it because he had such a good Senior Bowl. He had a terrific combine. There's really, I think, what's going to happen with Suamatia. I'm waiting for confirmation on this. Is that he's not going to participate. He's not going to go to Big 12 Pro Day. There's going to be teams that fly into Salt Lake City to work him out. He'd be the perfect fit for the Kansas City Chiefs at 32, but I think he's going to go well before them, maybe the Dallas Cowboys.
Wow, you think he's going to go that early, huh? I thought maybe he might be that tackle that does get to the Chiefs at 32. I guess people are just in love with just his physical traits are off the charts.
Everything. I mean, he's a good player, very athletic, played both right and left tackle and did a good job of it. When you watch the film on him, the film, not only the athleticism, but the nastiness. I mean, he's a guy who looks to bury opponents into the ground, and he's able to do it not just at the line of scrimmage, but out on the second level.
Yeah, and then in the pass game, he's got the feet to be a really good pass protector. I'm with you, Tony. We talked about him early in the process, and we were both big fans of his, and my love has not gone away. I think he's going to be a really good player. Maybe it's some refining to do of his game, but that's where we stand with him. All right, we got some quarterback questions here. So I'm going to rattle those off in a row here just because I think we're not tired of talking about him, but we've talked about him a lot. This one from Shia J, JJJ. Is JJ McCarthy a realistic option as the second overall pick in the draft. And I imagine the reason she asked this question is because Tom Pelissero, reporting for the NFL Network from the owners' meeting on, that would be Monday, said talking, and this is the way he phrased it, and I'm going to phrase it this way on purpose because I thought it was purposeful the way he did it, and it's relevant. Talking to executives around the league that know the way Adam Peters thinks about quarterback, he's the GM of the Washington Commanders, J.J. McCarthy could very well be their number one choice at quarterback here. That's not reporting that's who they're going to take. That's reporting what other people think Peters might do. So it's a roundabout way. And then the same segment, Mike Garofalo says that people around the league think they're going to take Jaden Daniels. So I think that's the context of this question. To me, that would be pretty wild, Tony, to have McCarthy go over both Jaden Daniels and Drake May. But there is a lot of love on the streets. You know, you talk to people that have been in the league and have scouted and know people in the business. Coaches and GMs love them some J.J. McCarthy. Your overall thoughts, is it realistic that he could go number two?
Not very realistic. And in my opinion, it would be the reach of the century over Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and especially Jaden Daniels, because I think Jaden Daniels would be, you know, the way Adam Peters thinks. They haven't had the pro day yet at LSU as we were taping. So they haven't had the pro day yet at North Carolina. So I would put it under 5% right now. And I think that pick will be and should be Jaden Daniels.
All right, so we got a combination of James Hill and then, what does it say? Mr. John, I can't remember her name. Mr. John Chimpo. How many quarterbacks in round one this year?
I'm going to stick with four. I'm going to be stubborn, stick with four. Could a team trade into the bottom part of round one and maybe take Michael Penix as the first round closes out? Possibly, but I'm going to say four.
You think Penix will go ahead of Nix?
I think he's, listen, you saw Nix at the Senior Bowl. You saw Nix at the Combine. Do you think Bo Nix physically is a first-round quarterback?
Tony, it's funny. Like, I went back and I rewatched Penix and Nix last week. And if I can combine the way Nix plays with Michael Penix's arm, I'd have a top-five quarterback.
No doubt about it. I mean, Bo Nix, he gets it between the ears. Bo Nix mentally and intellectually is a lot like J.J. McCarthy on the field. There's no doubt about it, okay? He doesn't have that same moxie, but, you know, he sees what's going on. But you got to be concerned about the arm strength. I mean, you know, he had his opportunity at the Senior Bowl. You were there. We didn't see any great passes. At the Combine, he was throwing bounce passes. I mean, is Bo Nix anything other than a game manager? And that's okay. I firmly believe that's okay if you feel – you fill the proper pieces around them, but you're not taking that type of quarterback in round one. Some team may, but I wouldn't take him in round one.
Yeah, I just love watching Nix. He's the one guy in this class, Tony, and I'm including the guys even at the top here. No one gets the ball out in rhythm and on time the way Nix does. He looks like an NFL passer where I know he's in the gun, but he gets it, you know, three steps, stop, ball's out. And you don't see that, you guys, the ball come out on time like that. And it's a lot of short stuff, I get it. It's a lot of schemed up stuff, I get it. But I could see how that could be attractive to some of these coaches and GMs. And then James Hill had a follow-up. He said, if the first four picks are quarterbacks, could the next four picks be receivers? And I'm assuming he's including Brock Bowers in that conversation.
No, because I think an offensive tackle's got to fit in there somewhere. I think because Joe Walt and even Fashano, I'm still a Fashano guy, are higher rated than a Dunze. I would say no because of the strength of the offensive tackle class and the need for offensive tackles. I mean, we talked about the Chargers at five and the Titans at seven. The desperate need that those teams have, especially the Titans at seven, for an offensive tackle.
Shedrick Carter, too. Any idea what Atlanta's draft plans might be now that they have Kirk Cousins secure a quarterback?
I still think it's going to be an edge rusher. I think that they are one of the teams that if J.J. McCarthy falls past six, they will be on the phone seeing if they could trade down, because if they trade down to 11, Dallas Turner, Jared Verse is still there. If they trade down to 12, you know, one of those good edge rushers are going to be there. So I think, you know, We talked about the Chargers trading. I think the Jets are in a good position. Atlanta Falcons, and they were also in a very good spot in the sense that they could trade down a few slots if J.J. McCarthy's there and one of the teams want to move up to get a quarterback and still get the player that they want that fills a need.
Yeah, Tony, I wonder, too, if they're sitting there at 8 and that third wide receiver is still there, would a team be willing to move up to get whomever's left from the Harrison Neighbors or Dunze group as well?
Could be. Looking at their roster right now, they're not going to take a receiver, obviously. Maybe that's still early for a cornerback. Again, they're going to be in a good spot. I would be shocked. I think there's less of a chance a team moves up for a receiver, but I think they're being a real good spot. Team moves up for like a J.J. McCarthy.
Agreed. I'm with you. Are there any top tier guards in this draft? This one from Tauber _M. And it's funny. I'm assuming he's going to say like top tier. He means guys with first round grades. I'm not sure there's straight up guards that have first round grades, Tony. There are tackles that project to guard that could have first round grades, but there is no, you know, Quentin Nelson style player in this draft.
You're looking, the two guys would be Troy Fanatu of Washington and Jordan Morgan of Arizona, who are tackles that may project to guard. But I think you're going to use them at tackle until they prove they can't play guard. Graham Barton, you know, is he a tackle? Is he a center? I have him on my guard board. But no, there are no true first-round guards in this draft. I think your true guards, you're looking at Christian Haynes of UConn in the second round, Cooper Beebe in the second round, Cooper Beebe, whose draft stock has fallen, 31.5-inch arm, did not bench press well at the combine. He was a guy who early on we thought could go first round, but when you looked at those measurements, he's kind of fallen down. There are good guards. There's just be good guards available on day two, just no top 32 picks.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. All right, Big Dogs 13-18. I'm assuming this is Georgia related, the Big Dogs, because his question is, what teams, Tony, do you think might have Brock Bowers rated over one of those top three wide receivers?
I don't think that I have Brock Bowers rated very highly. I have Brock Bowers right now as my number three player on my board, but I don't think there's any team that's going to have Brock Bowers rated over Marvin Harrison. So I think there'll be a lot of teams that have Bowers rated over Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze, but I don't think there's any team out there that'll have Bowers as their top pass catcher.
Yeah, as a raw grade, I think I'll probably end up having Bowers with a slightly higher grade than a Dunze, but then the position value, I think, is going to push a Dunze over Bowers for me personally. All right, we got two left here. NYG Tim, what are your thoughts on Carlton Johnson, cornerback out of Fresno State? He loves himself some Carlton Johnson. He wants to know why people aren't talking about him enough.
Ran 4.27. That's probably a guy we should have talked about in the pro day workouts. Ran 4.27, 4.28 last week at Fresno State. Was the guy who bounced around the college scene before finding a home at Fresno State. I think he's going to be a very good man-off zone type of corner. He's not a big guy. He's a thin guy. He's going to struggle in press coverage. He's got decent ball skills. He plays very fast. You watch the film. He's very explosive. Covers receivers well on crossing patterns. I think he's a day three pick that is really going to have to, it's going to get a little bit bigger and stronger, but you're going to use him as his own backed off the line of scrimmage type scheme.
All right, final question. And guys, great job with the questions. I thought we got some really interesting stuff where we haven't really focused on a ton, so I think there's some really good stuff here. Really appreciate you guys chiming in. Last question. Lord Luckin, favorite group of five prospect not named Quinion Mitchell?
I'm going to go with Christian Haynes of UConn, who I think is one of the best guards in this year's draft. Solid senior ball, outstanding combine, good film at UConn for the past couple of years, for the past like 3 years I've watched them. I think he's an early second round pick. And then the guy after that also comes from the MAC, like Quinion Mitchell. It would be Marshawn Nealon.
Oh, that was going to be my guy. I'm with you.
Of Western Michigan, who I think is a third round pick, has had a good postseason, had a terrific pro day, good edge rusher, can stand him up over tackle, can have him come out of a 3-point stance. I think you got those two guys will be day two picks coming from schools other than the group of five.
Yeah, look, Marshawn Nealon's a guy that is big. He kind of played a little defensive tackle at the Senior Bowl too, a little, you know, passing situation, three technique stuff. He's long. He tested really well. So I'm with you. I think a team will certainly pick him. I think he might even get in the round two, Tony. We'll have to see in the where he gets picked. But I think, you know, him and Haynes will both be in that same area when it comes to when they're going to be picked. All right, Tony, before we say goodbye, any closing remarks or thoughts?
No, I mean, the funds, all this stuff is going to get thrown around. Like you just mentioned, the Pelissero, and people now believing that J.J. McCarthy is going to could go second. Next week will be a big conversation about Pro Day Week. LSU, with Jaden Daniels, and North Carolina with Drake May. The Washington Pro Day is later this week, the Washington State Pro Day. So it's going to kind of – Pro Day schedule ends off with a bang.
Absolutely, and I believe I'm double-checking our schedule next week right now, Tony. I believe we decided next week is going to be our mock draft, correct? Is that going to be our early April mock?
You are the boss, so if you say so, yeah. I mean, I got the schedule somewhere.
Yes,
but,
I have it right here. I got it up.
Okay, I'm going to go with that.
April 2nd, mock draft. So we'll get. So this is going to be our schedule the rest of the way, folks. We're going to do a mock draft next week. We're also going to update all the Pro Day stuff, so we'll do both of those next week. Then we have our latest news and Pro Day updates and stuff. We'll have our updated top 10s on offense with some fan questions. The next week, we'll have our updated top 10s on defense with some fan questions. And we talked about the guys at the top so much. We'll try to focus in on some of the guys in the back half of those top 10s, just so we give, you know, talk about some different guys that maybe we haven't done a ton of over the last few months. And then we're going to have, I think the plan is to do two shows the week of the draft. We're going to have Tony's latest rumors shows, first round players, and I'll ask Tony like the big questions of the draft. I did this show last year. I think that was a lot of fun. And then on the Wednesday before the draft, we'll do Tony's final mock, and I will let him make all the picks, and then I will pick them apart as he goes and tell him why he's going to be wrong. And then we'll both be wrong. It'll be a lot of fun. For Tony Pauline, I'm John Schmoke. Tony Pauline, of course, check out all his work over at Sports Keita. And don't forget, draft season was brought to you by Moody's. Decode risk, unlock opportunity. Visit Moody's.com to learn more. If you enjoyed the show, go subscribe to it on your favorite podcast platform. Go to Giants.com/podcast or the Giants mobile app, where you can find our other podcasts if you're a Giants fan, like Big Blue Kickoff Live and the Giants Huddle. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next time on draft season.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.